You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Give me 1 second. I just took a bite of this bar.
No, the interview started, Dan. It started. No.
Nobody yes. wants to listen to me.
That's Chomper. ASMR.
Yes, yes, they do. This is it. this is what it, life is like at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. And Dan's eating and breathing. Oh, my God. That sounds horrible. That sounds horrible. I think we're off to a really good. This is a really professional.
Welcome to Guys Who Like Musicals.
Welcome to Guys Who Like Musicals. Delon, Grant, I'm so happy you're here. I'm sorry that you had to listen to Dan's heavy breathing and chewing, but that's basically what this show is.
No,
so.
It was his yes and his ASMR moment.
That's right.
I still don't understand. No Tino shade to those who do really get down with ASMR, but I haven't really gotten into it. I don't know what it is really.
Yeah,
I don't either. Yeah. I don't either.
You know,
but you know what you do know a lot about is Come From Away the Musical.
Nice.
So I would like to talk about some Come From Away the Musical. I'd like to talk about Providence, Rhode Island. I'd like to talk about the University of Frickin' Michigan.
Boom.
And we're going to talk about musicals.
Yes.
So an actor is saying his lines and then out of nowhere, he just starts singing. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Jimmy, don't cry for me.
Delon, thank you for being here. Okay, so lots to cover, but first of all, this movie. There was a movie.
Yes.
You were filming a movie.
Yes.
And it just ended. So take us through this. What happened? Come From Away, the film.
It's we randomly just got an email from the producers that we were gonna. They wanted to shoot a film, and it's not our producers specifically. It's another production company, and I won't go into all their.
We missed it, Joe. Joe, we could have done it. That could have been us.
Oh, shooting it, you mean?
Yeah.
You could have, yes.
How do we get into the pro shot game? Is it a pro shot?
What is a pro shot?
Pro shot is what the fans call it when, like, you film the stage version without any other bells and whistles. Like, it's kind of, I guess Hamilton is a pro shot, but it's like a pro shot on steroids. Really, a pro shot is like the Into the Woods movie.
Okay.
The original Into the Woods movie?
Yes.
Okay.
The Into the Woods on stage. Yeah. The only one. Got Sorry, it. The other one I don't even count.
Yeah.
So the actual like the feature.
Yeah. The feature, yeah, no, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Was it that style? Did you just do the show and the show was recorded?
No, it was a pro shot. I think it's the same company that did Hamilton actually. Cool. Which I still haven't watched because nice. I haven't watched much theater on TV because I thought it would
makes you sad. Yeah,
it made me sad watching that Hamilton. That recording just made me. It made me sad. We got done. I thought it was wonderfully done, but it actually just.
I auditioned for it like 7 to 9 times, so I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna hold off on that. I'm a lot of emotions around that, so. It was so cool. It was, I mean, for a multitude of reasons, you know, none of us were really working. Some of us were doing film and TV stuff here and there, but, it was an opportunity to bring the show back, you know? Totally different experience. I mean, it's the same show, you know what I mean? But you know how film goes, it's start and stop. So, you know, we ran it and then we like kind of started and stopped and got the coverage that they needed. Didn't see too much of what they were shooting, but from what our crew was saying, as they're watching the monitors, they're really excited. So I'm stupid excited. I still haven't, it hasn't sunk in what it means. We were just talking about Into the Woods and another cast member was like, yo, we just made like theater history. Like we're going to be the movie that kids watch when they're, you know, and kids, you know? And I was like, my mind was blown. I just was kind of so happy to be working. I was like, whoa, it's so cool.
That's
a bucket list moment for all of us, for sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
And
totally.
You were saying it just kind of came out of nowhere. You got a random email and they were like, we want to do this. And then they sent you a SAG-AFTRA contract and you had to like figure that all out.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, there was negotiations back and forth with the production company and trying to figure out whose jurisdiction it was. You know, is it Equity? Is it SAG? They split it because, you know, everyone wants money, you know.
Sure.
And yeah, that part of things was a little weird just because, I mean, I don't know, they're just different rules, you know, and the two unions and negotiations and all that, or not negotiations, but I forget what you call it. It's like when like stage managers aren't repped in SAG, right? But they are Equity. Right, and so like what jurisdiction do they fall under? How do they get paid? So it was a lot of back and forth with that kind of contract stuff, which, you know, money is never comfortable. Not specifically the show, but I always get like, ooh, hot under the collar, you know? I'm like, I just want to make sure that like everything's fair and copacetic. And it was, you know, it was fantastic, actually. Again, just to be working and to have that check clear on Thursday, I was like, thank you, Jesus.
Oh my God.
Right.
When did they email you? When did they start? I mean, I'm sure they've been talking about doing the movie for a while, but when did they reach out to you to do the movie?
It was a collective email that they sent to all of us. They were like, basically just interest, you know, because I think our producers were rightly concerned about COVID, you know, and they took a lot of precautions. Course, yeah. You know, we all lived in a hotel in Midtown for 3 weeks together, you know.
Wow.
And we rehearsed in the hotel, and then we went to shot in the theater and stuff. So
I have a question about that, but do they have distribution plans yet? Do you know where it's going to live?
Yes. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say or what I'm not supposed to say, but the announcement is out. So I think that's totally okay Apple Plus bought it.
Great.
I think I'm pretty sure that's okay to say just because the announcement.
I read about it on Deadline or something. Great.
And I mean, whatever. I don't know. With this stuff, it's kind of like, what can we say or not say? Guys, people know social media. There was like a post of us going into the theater and all this stuff, right? It's out there. And just let people be excited. You know what I mean?
Right.
Totally.
So you're living in a hotel for 3 weeks with your cast members. Was it like summer camp, or was it like what happens when I want to punch Joe in the face?
Daniel? All of the above. No, it was absolutely like summer camp. And, you know, still in that, you know, the haze of like, especially theater summer camp. You know, when you go to theater summer camp, we're all like little dorks at school.
Camp Broadway USA in Providence, Rhode Island, DeLon. That was my shit.
Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp in Northern Michigan.
I went to Cherubs in Northeastern, Northwestern, excuse me. You know, you're dorks at home and you come to theater camp and you're fucking everyone's interested and you know, studious, you know what I mean? And like working hard. And then you leave and you feel so full from the experience and you leave and there's like a haze of days where you're like, oh, what, not only what do I do with myself, but like, that's, that fills me up. That fills my cup, you know? And you know, the context of the pandemic is also, factors into that. But yes, summer camp, you know, we all could be on outside on the roof without masks, which was like, because most everyone was vaccinated. So that felt awkward for a few days, right? I live alone, so I haven't been around, you know, more than three people at once, you know. That was surreal and also felt so normal and beautiful. Also, like living in a hotel, you know, I toured forever, which brought back a little bit of PTSD.
Sure. I can totally relate to that. You know? And the weird part is you walk into the hotel room and part of you feels like home.
Yes.
I think that's the weirdest
thing.
It's like I lived in a hotel for 3 years. So whenever I walk into a hotel, I'm like, oh, this is my house now. It's like, no, it's not your house.
Funny. I was I toured for 3.5 years and like was just like, oh, I know how this goes, you know. And I was FaceTiming with a friend and he was like, everything is unpacked. He's like, oh, when I go on vacation, I was like, I'm not on vacation. I was like, I'm in a hotel, but I'm not on vacation. I was like, the first thing I did on tour was unpack everything. Like, make yourself feel like you live there, you know, for mental health sake, you know. Yeah, it was the hotel part of it was cool. It was weird looking outside and not being able to walk outside, because that's how I've kind of sustained my my contact with the world, just living alone. I really didn't, we couldn't go anywhere, you know? Right. So yeah. Walking out, daily geriatric walks, as I call them, were kind of my status quo every day. And so watching people walk outside, it was like, I feel like I'm in prison a little bit, but... someone called it Martha Stewart prison and I died. I was like, yeah.
Nice, right. Prison. Could you like, was there like a gym or food? Like, what'd you guys do for food? Did you just like Postmates every day?
No, they actually had a service that was provided for us. I think the hotel provided it, which was good quality food. You know, I'm a big dude, so I needed like two dinners, you know? And you know, I also haven't been moving. So you're like, using all this energy all of a sudden again, and you're starving, you know, but so there were some late night like Thai Chinese ordering situations that happened. But yeah, there was also a gym, but we had to, like, because of COVID protocols, we had to sign up for it. And I got impatient with like, oh, what time am I supposed to go? You know what? It's 3 weeks. I've already gained 20 pounds. Just leave it.
Let it immortalize itself on camera.
You know what? Listen, my cost is actually pretty big, so it looked okay. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. So great. Yeah, that was like Will Smith posted this thing the other day where he was like, I am in the worst shape of my life. And I just totally, I was like, me too, man. I see you and I appreciate you. And then he came out with something, but he was like, no, this body got me through the pandemic though.
Right,
you know, there
right.
was like something like, so forever you will have captured Come From Away in the middle of a pandemic. You'll watch it. You know what I mean? Like, you'll have that experience watching it and being like, oh my God, I can't believe where we were when we did this.
Right.
You know, it was just crazy. I mean, was it? It had to have been emotional. Was it just incredibly emotional to be back in a theater and to be with those people that you had spent, that cast that you had spent 2.5 years with?
Oh man, yeah, you can imagine. It was so intense. The first, you know, our first read sing through. You know, we were a wreck. You know,
I can only imagine.
Oh God, and our show is just we don't lean into the emotion. I think that's kind of one of the many gifts or the magical parts of our show. We kind of just plow through the moments to get through, you know. You have the experience, we're not having the experience for the audience, you know. But when we did that first read through, I mean, especially toward the end, we were just a wreck, you know. And then we got to the theater and, like, you know, that was a whole different experience, you know, because I'm really good friends with my dresser. Most of us are on the men's floor. We have one dresser. I hadn't seen him, you know, we've talked and stuff, but like, I was, you know, such a wreck. I cried when I folded my jeans and I put them up where I put them. And then I hung my shirt over the chair and I was like, oh, it's like fucking, it's like everything. This is what, it's so normal. I just burst into tears. It was so the most innocuous, you know, kind of thing. Felt normal. It's also, I'm sure you guys experience this too, because when you stop doing what we do, we invest so much of ourselves in what we do, you know. I had one of my many existential crises over the pandemic was like, who am I without performing, right? Who am I if I'm not an actor? Right. I'm so many things. All three of us were many things, you know. But I think we give so much of ourselves to it requires so much of us physically, mentally, you know, emotionally, without it, I just was like a little bit lost. So coming back to it, I was like, it was a deep breath, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
For the past 30 years, Care Heating and Cooling put you first. You are the reason they are open 7 days a week. You are why they make it easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Concern for your safety is why they check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. It's because of you that their technicians are paid to fix your furnace and air conditioner, not sell you a new one. And if you do need a new furnace, their team will make sure you get exactly what you need at a cost that fits your budget. Care Heating and Cooling is committed to doing business right. Call them at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Even just like seeing Joe for the first time when the pandemic was over was like super bizarre. I can't imagine, you know, they're talking about a waitress revival, LOL. I couldn't imagine going back into that building in that space and those memories like nothing had changed.
Yeah.
It was about two holes of Joe and I playing golf fully vaccinated that we looked at each other and we were like, it's like this didn't happen.
I know.
That's the
And yet a whole year's gone.
Yeah.
And everything is different.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. And what Dan and I have talked a lot about this, that I really hope that the change that is needed happens, because it can feel like this was just a blip on the radar. All right. Of a sudden it's May of 2021. It feels like it's May of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, no, so much has changed and it needs to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Were there conversations around the building that did it feel different, or did it, like you said, did it sort of just feel like it was a time capsule that you just opened?
I think the what you just stated was kind of the sentiment. The weird, trippy part of it was that, you know, nothing has changed. You know, when I mm-hmm. went back to the theater to get my script before we even started rehearsing, I was like, oh shit, it says March, the March calendar of 2020 is just sitting there, you know, wow. with March circled, you know,
right.
our sign-in sheet was still there, you know. It was just wow. really, really trippy, you know. But again, like you're saying, we've had a whole three-dimensional, yeah. like, we all experienced it, so there's no need to go through all the things that happened in the last
right,
year.
Right.
But like so many reckonings, so many things that I think individually and kind of collectively we've all experienced. So to come back to normalcy and routine feels awesome and grounding, but it also is like, am I being gaslit? Like,
right.
So it's a little weird, you know?
Was there any, this may be a bit of a leading question, but was there any hesitancy from anybody in the company to go back to work? Because I know there's kind of conversations in the community right now about whether or not we should be kind of standing firm, how we deal with contracts coming, like what needs to be done. Was there any conversation in that direction?
You know, our producers and really made a concerted effort to kind of mitigate any of that and also give space for us to express it. So mm-hmm. if people were like, if anybody had those concerns, you know, I feel like our producers are amazing. They have ample opportunity to go and express that. And they're such great people that they would really do what they could to try to make that individual comfortable. But they also hired an independent company to, and I think it's probably mandated by New York State or New York City or in some capacity, but to take care of all of the protocol, mm-hmm. all of the COVID protocol. Mm-hmm. So to work, they had to adhere to certain things. And to you know, not to go too far down that rabbit hole, but you know, some people were like, do we have to wear masks in rehearsal, right? Like that feels like we're all vaccinated. Do we have to do that? And they were like, yeah, we have mm-hmm. to do that. So so they really made a concerted effort to kind of make everyone feel comfortable mm-hmm. and do what we could, right? Because you didn't want them right. to be shut down.
Right.
I'm trying to think if there are any specific, no, I don't think it was any specific COVID precaution or apprehensions that I experienced. I found more people being like, you know, rehearsal, we have to do this, but also the roof, we have the access to this rooftop. And I was always like, oh, I can take my mask off. Are you guys sure? You're sure. Even outside today, I was walking outside and I was like, I guess I can not have a mask on. Right. Oh, this is.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. And I think we all need to sort of, those of us who love the theater and want desperately to be in the seats for, you know, in early September or mid September when the show, we need to like start to be around human beings again mm-hmm. a little bit. I think that we're going to be wearing masks for a while, but like they're saying September, we're just going to open the floodgates and come on in, let's just do it, you know? And it's like, okay, for better or worse, that's the plan. So I don't know. I flew on an airplane for the first time last week. And I was like, I think it was good. It was fine. I felt fine the whole time, except for the boarding process. But the boarding process is sitting in a Broadway theater. Like that is
you know,
you're next to this person who's like on top of you, like I'm zone one or whatever, just fucking sneezing. And you're like, I don't know where you've been, bro.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, well, it's very exciting. And is there any idea when the movie's going to come out? Have they, I'm sure the edit's going to take a long time, but are they hoping for the summer, do you think, or?
I think they're trying to speed through it. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know what it takes to edit a film, but.
Well, I do, and they can do it pretty fast if you ask me, so.
And actually, this is great, Delon. I didn't actually tell you this. Dan and I helped the University of Michigan acting seniors with their senior showcase.
No way.
Class of 2021 and the class of 2020. And we basically filmed a short film that was not even
a feature short film.
It was a feature film.
It was 90 minutes.
Where like everybody has a scene, everybody has two scenes, and we helped them film it, and Dan edited it. So Dan did not edit a 90-minute feature film. He edited a 90-minute showcase, which felt like a feature
film. It was a feature film. It's 32 scenes.
It's a lot of scenes.
34 scenes.
A lot of scenes.
And do you guys with that, because I do a little bit of, you know, I think we all kind of do teaching and coaching.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is kind of like going to be something that sticks around? Because that could be a hustle, you guys.
Well, that's, I mean, we're trying to figure out kind of whether or not the schools are going to be interested in that. But, you know, if you want to hear the sales pitch from a business standpoint for us, like,
I'm ready.
We were teaching people how to shoot their own work so they can go forward and do that. That's a value pitch. We were teaching them how to make better self-tapes because they were filming themselves basically in scenes, and it was essentially a self-tape. It just may have had two camera angles instead of one, and there's some cuts that happen because we can do shot, reverse shot. So you're teaching them how to self-tape. Those things are both valuable for the students, but also, why would you pay $12,000 to rent a theater for 2 days? I just, like, why would you spend money on that? You know?
Yeah.
And I get it. If you're a musical theater program, I think it makes sense to be in a space, to have the room to, you know, in that traditional model. But for the acting majors that are going to be working on television and film mostly anyway, I feel like we have a very targeted niche. Let's come in there and shoot something that kind of feels like a pro shot. We shoot it on a stage, but we make it look like a movie and give them that experience and let them take that with them. But Joe, what were you going to say?
Well, just that the agents and casting directors and people that we talked to loved it because then they have something to take with them. When the industry professionals go to a live showcase, then they show up, they watch it, they take some notes and they leave. Now they have that scene. Now they have,
right.
You know, so they go through a whole showcase season, they meet a bunch of actors and they're like, okay, you know, I know that I like Delon, but now 3 weeks have passed. Go back. Now they can go back and rewatch that scene and be like, oh yeah, this is what I, you know, this is what he did. And so it just came out of nowhere, but it was a very cool thing. We got to go back to Ann Arbor. I went back to Ann Arbor.
I did not. I was not vaccinated yet.
Again, I feel like it's so smart, you guys, because you're not tastemakers, but I feel like if you pull the industry that way, mm-hmm. if you're like, this is what we do, we provide this service, and this is why, with the pitch you just gave me, so smart. But also I feel like, you know, how many times have I met with an agent, right? You meet with an agent, I met with one, how many agents don't listen to this. I met with an agent just before the shutdown, you know? And he was like, my other agents have to see you, right? So like, to your point, these kids he can take it back to the agency and be like, oh, Delon, you know, this is who I saw at the showcase.
Right.
But I just feel like it's niche and it's smart. And a lot of things are going to go digital after this, after the pandemic. And I feel like if you capitalize on it, it'd be smart. The end. Off my soapbox.
We're going to put that on the website. So
yeah, we sure
are. That's your testimonial seal of approval.
Yeah. Listen, I'll shoot it right here with myself. I'll send it to you. You tell me what you want me to say.
It's okay? Going right in the pitch deck.
So I want to talk about your time there because you, and just in general, because you went to Michigan and majored in acting, right? And then you went and got a master's at BOCO, right?
Yeah.
In music and sort of focused on music. So what was your journey to, like, you know, did you want that sort of serious acting training and you were always a singer, or because you've done mostly musicals now, I mean, a ton of musicals. So what was your journey through higher education?
Yeah. So I went to, I was, you know, grew up in Northern Minnesota, mainly. And I we had a small theater program. We just kind of all did everything. You know, we sang, we acted and stuff. And I was a little blind. I only applied to a handful of schools in Michigan. I applied late and I went to the campus and I was like, oh, yes, please let me go here.
Yeah.
And once I got in, I was like elated, you know, save for the fact that at the time it cost me $38,000, you know,
right,
a year.
Right.
I went and I was just so naive, man. I went and I thought we'd just do all of it. I thought we'd sing, we'd act, we'd dance. And they were like, oh, this is just, look at the curriculum. I was like, oh, this is just acting, which I was super grateful for. But I was so confused by the idea that the musical theater program and the acting program were different. At my 10 years, so many of the musical theater kids took acting classes with our professors, right? Mm-hmm. So I was always a little stymied by that or confused by it, but I was glad I got the acting training because I feel like that was like the foundations of all of it, you know, for
right.
me. There are a lot of amazing singers in the world, but you know, I'll buy your album, you know? I don't want to see you up there singing pretty, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It's awesome if that's a benefit that you have while you're acting, you know, but like, I'll listen to you on Spotify. So I went to grad schools. I moved to New York for a stint for about 6 months and with $3,000. And I thought it was the most money I saved in my life. You know, I grew up a really poor kid. So I really didn't have a family to lean on, you know? Mm-hmm. So I moved to New York and I was like, all I was getting was musical callbacks and auditions and things, despite not really having the training, you know? And I did this show here in Brooklyn and all these people could sing me out of the water. And I was like, okay. And you also look on Broadway and you see the plays on Broadway and it's led by stars,
it's
you know,
movie stars.
Led by,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And yeah. That wasn't brand new when I first moved to New York back in 06, but you know, I was like, there's no chance of me getting that, you know, because I don't have a name yet. But musicals, right? Like, they need more people, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a numbers game. So I wanted to go back to grad school anyway because I thought I wanted to teach for a long time. So I only applied to BoCo. They had a master's program. I went. I will look back on my Michigan experience for the rest of my days thinking I would do those 4 years again in a heartbeat. That was like such a pivotal time for me. BoCo, not so much. BoCo was a lot harder for a multitude of reasons, but just mainly in the support kind of, realm of things. I kind of felt like it wasn't, I'm a better singer because of it. I'm a better singer because of it, period.
There you go.
You know, but there's a lot of issues that I had with the school itself. So.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
School
and
is so
everyone experience, you know.
Right. I think school is hard because, you know,
school is hard.
Yeah, it's just hard. You know, I've been talking about this a lot with other teachers, with my teacher, my coach, and he's like, you know, you're not really meant to learn how to be an artist in a school. It's not really academia is not the place to learn how to be a creative professional. But that is more and more like what we do. Joe and I, obviously all three of us, you know, like in different programs, but
I think,
you know, there's not one way, there's not one school and there's not one experience at each school.
Right. I think that's the biggest thing that like I tell students and that we talk about, like everybody's experience is so unique.
Right.
And so I think all three of us could talk about the pros and cons of like going to college for this ridiculous career that we're in. Lots of pros, lots of cons, you know. But you know, we're figuring it out.
But I will say, just to your point, Dan, I feel like artistry is not formulaic,
right?
You know,
right.
And I think the problem with school is that how do you teach it? How do you teach someone to be an artist, right? How do you teach talent? Well, you really can't. You teach skills, you know. Yeah. And I think going to BoCo I really was trying to fit myself into a hole, you know?
Right. Right.
And be like, I'm a Brian Stokes Mitchell. Oh no, but I need to able to do this. And I'm not a dancer. I'm an actor. I'm like, how about I just do, what do you have for me? You know,
right.
Musical theater, I think, is a little bit more prescriptive than I enjoy sometimes. So that's also the thing that I kind of brought to the school as well.
Yeah. That's super real, especially in the training. This weekend, I was going through all of my college notebooks that have been sitting in my closet since 2013 and just like flipping through, trying to see if I actually wanted to keep anything, threw it all away, trying to get rid of junk, right? But just looking at like me and Joe sang the same rep every year, don't even have the same voice type.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like we don't really do the same things. We could be like cousins, kind of like we have similar complexions.
Well, there's like a Venn diagram. Yeah. There's a Venn diagram of stuff, but like it's small and getting smaller like the older we get. But I just back to what you were saying about training. It's like, I think that you can teach skills, Delon, like you said, but then once you graduate, once you get to the real world, then you become an artist. Then you got to, then you figure out what your voice is. What do you want to say? What you want to do?
Yeah, I completely agree. And the best advice is like when we train, they teach us how to be like other people. But what you're actually doing is preparing for an industry that doesn't exist yet. So like what Shoshana Bean said on this show was that there was no Shoshana Bean when I got out of college. And so there is no DeLon, you know?
Right, right.
You're not Brian Stokes Mitchell. You are you. And you're going to create what you create. And we're going to...
I have goosebumps, Daniel. I have goosebumps. Tell the kids, though. Honest to God. Seriously, though. That's legit, man.
Segwaying into your Broadway debut and Come From Away, how did that come about for you?
Man, you know, back to Hamilton. I'd auditioned for Hamilton a bunch of times and was at Telsey. And they needed somebody really quickly to replace and Come From Away. And I had no idea what the show was. But, you know, the casting director for Hamilton was talking to the casting director for Come From Away. They were auditioning at the same time and introduced me to the casting director from Come From Away before my audition. Didn't know why. My agent called me and was like, hey, they want you to go in for this show. And I was like, oh, okay. But I was kind of like, you know, auditions are hard. And
especially at that place.
and you know, I am not the best auditioner in the world. And so I was like, oh, okay, fine. And so I went in the next day and didn't care. That's a hard phrase because it's like, it's not that
I love it. I know exactly.
Joe knows exactly what it is. Joe books every job he doesn't care about.
And it's not about, I don't want to take the words on anybody, but it's not about not caring.
Right.
It's about that separation of just like, you're just going to go in and I'm going to do great work. I'm going to try to do great work, but I'm not going to put my whole life into this thing. Like my existence depends on whether or not I'm in the Book of Mormon.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's like, anyway, go, sorry to interrupt.
No,
go ahead.
No, okay. But that's, Joe, that's exactly it. It's you know, I label as I don't give a fuck or I don't care.
Right,
if I could bottle, I don't care. You know, I'd be a millionaire. Right. But it's not that. It's I like the idea of separating it. It's like, it's not that it doesn't matter. I'm going to do all the work that's necessary because I'm a professional. Right. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to live and die whether I get this. If that phrasing doesn't make sense, but you get my
totally 100%.
And so I went in and had a good time. You know, like I really just was like, yeah, you know, whatever. I had that audition yesterday. That sucked. Let me like do this thing, you know, and like feel better about myself, you know.
Yeah.
I got a call back the next week and was almost missed it, right? Just because I had the wrong location. I thought I was at Telsey. It was downtown. Pearl Studios, and ran in, did the audition and the callback, and then the next day got the call again because they needed somebody really quickly, you know.
So
which was mind-boggling because, you know, Broadway, awesome. Like Broadway, yes, please, Broadway, please keep gifting us all with jobs, right?
Right.
We love it. We love what we do, man. But at some point, I feel like I had just wanted to work. I just wanted to tell stories. I just wanted to feel good about that. Like, I love being in rehearsal. Performance is amazing. Listen, clap for me, laugh at my jokes all the time. But rehearsal, when we're working, when we're excavating and figuring it out, that's what I love, right? Yeah. And so I think most of my career is regional. So I got used to that and kind of felt like, you know, oh, this is my bread and butter. This is kind of where my wheelhouse is. So when it fell into my lap, Come From Away and Broadway, I was a little shocked. I just didn't expect it, you know. It wasn't, it was my first Broadway show. So, I had a 3-week rehearsal process, 2.5. And then I had like a put in on a Friday. And that night I was in the show. Mm-hmm. And it was the day before my 34th birthday, 34th. Yeah, 34th birthday. Yeah, wow. So it was a really nice gift that year.
Wow, that's crazy. I want to just touch on was there a time you said like your career was trending very regional? You were playing, you know, a lot of parts, doing, you know, a lot of that stuff. I don't want to. This is not the right way to sort of phrase the question.
Is there a question?
Like,
is it coming?
Yes, there is. It's coming. Like, had your focus shifted from? Had your focus shifted from this like Broadway dream to like, I'm good telling stories in regional houses. I'm good telling stories on TV. And you know, were you kind of excited or cool with that lane? Or were you always trying to, of course you were. I mean, it's a stupid question. I'm sorry.
No, just, it's actually not, Joe.
I quit.
No, exactly. See ya. You're hitting the chord, man. You're hitting the chord. Because I think to go down into my psyche, it was a little like I was successful there. I was successful regionally, mostly in Boston after grad school, right? I worked a lot. I felt confident there. Broadway, you know, we're at the top of the game. You know, that's like, we're the 2% of people doing what we do. Mm-hmm. And so being successful there, not only did I not know it, but it's scary. It's scary to be like, oh, once you're... I had a professor say to me one time, what's your biggest fear, DeLon? And my immediate thought was my own success, which was like crazy. I could not believe I thought that. I was like, this is what I just thought. But now I understand that it's like, once I'm there, you expect me to be able to deliver that every damn time. And I'm fallible, you know? I will fall on my face. And I do on a regular basis. I think I had kind of put space, a little bit of a pond between me and Broadway, because not only had I not experienced it again, but it was like, oh, once I'm there, imposter syndrome, once I'm there, they expect me to do it all. And I don't know if I'm that good, you know?
God, yeah, that is so real.
Did you find, I think it's interesting that you said that you like the like explorative creative rehearsal process, given your acting training. Did you find it difficult to get put into a show that existed, where especially a show like that, where it was very prescriptive?
You know, it's so funny. This is the second time I've replaced in a big show like this. And these people, man, I mean, when you know, if you know Come From Away, the story, generosity, kindness, it permeates through top to bottom. I mean, you cannot be a jerk and tell the story, you know? They really let me make my own. Like they it's definitely a musical. They're like, you walk to 11, you sing your note, you know, it is definitely, and the magic of Come From Away is its direction. And it's like very precise. It has to be, because we're creating, you know, a whole story out of, you know, 12 actors,
a couple chairs,
14 chairs, two tables, three tables, and 9 musicians, you know? So it has to be really structured, but they really gave me leeway to create the characters, because we all play several characters, create the characters I wanted to, and that's not always the case. It was you know, a lot more handholding in my prior experiences. So so yes and no, I guess.
Well, it does feel like, because there's so much chairography, there's so many sharp moments, there's so many tight jokes, that it's not like Shakespearean, but you do have to hit the mark and say the line, you know? So how do you play within this formula? And I mean, I saw your performance many, many times. Mm-hmm. It was always different. It was always hysterical and moving and specific.
Thanks, man.
And so it's, you know, again, this is the part of the show where there's no question. This is where I start giving out the compliments.
Okay.
So
anyway, I just thought I think it's interesting that Broadway shows happen one way. It's very idiosyncratic the way it gets put together. Usually there were so many weird things in Waitress. And then two new people, I was the second replacement for my track. And they're still like, so you bring out two red plastic carnations, not your own, but for the other two people that you're sitting with, yours comes from this place because that's how we did it in rehearsal. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And they're like, well, that's how it's done here. And I'm like, Broadway is stupid. And so I said that in my second rehearsal, and I said, Broadway is stupid. And they quoted me for the whole stage management team would say that to me all the time because Broadway's stupid, right, Dan? And I was like, damn, I shouldn't have said that. But it's true. You know, it's just another weird rehearsal process and the weird things that people do in the rehearsal room in Boston or in San Diego or whatever turn into the things that people do 9 years down the line on the non-equity tour. It's like so, so bizarre to me.
It's so true. And I'll give you an anecdote that doesn't have to do with me, but one of our actors in our show, who is from Newfoundland, Patrina Bromley, beautiful woman, Canadian, talented woman, right? So she, during the rehearsal process in La Jolla, they're like trying to figure out how to do this choreography to make this plane. And, but you know, they're asking like, who can take this chair? And Patrina's like, I can. The poor standbys, in the first chair move we have to change the set, Patrina removes four chairs, has to put on a jacket. Meanwhile, other actors are just like, I'm just going to walk over here and then sit my light. And I was like, every standby is like, God damn, Patrina. And even when we were rehearsing for the film, I was like, did you make it? She's like, just barely, but I did. I was like, man, it stays. That track will always do that from here on out, you know?
Exactly.
There's a bunch of stories about the Broadway stupid. Again, we have a podcast called Why We Love Musicals. Right. There's a story of when Patti LuPone was doing, I think it was Les Mis. She was like in a development something about it for Les Mis, and she was playing Fantine, and she would hide. Everybody plays all of the principals play ensemble tracks except
except for
Valjean and Javert. And so like the Fontaine has to go do, you know, be like a lovely lady in the, or something. I don't remember what the hell it was, but she would go hide. She'd like go hide in the corner. And they were like, no, you have to be in this. And she was not wanting to, you know, hiding in the corner because she knew she would have to do it 8 times a week.
One of our actors, the original company members, Lee McDougal, another Canadian, did something very similar come from why he's not in this prayer scene. Everyone else is in the scene. But he was like,
I'm going to use the bathroom.
Yeah, he was just gone when they staged the scene, so he's not in it. So funny.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
So if you've taken away, we've talked about this a few times on the show, but if you young listeners out there are going to be in your original Broadway cast, you're going to know, hot tip from us, don't be the person who volunteers for the set moves just because you're 22. Andy Kelso made the mistake. You know, everybody's made the mistake. I'm just
referencing shows
that I've done where people have done that.
If you go see Moulin Rouge during Bad Romance, the opening of Act Two, it's like the craziest dance number you've ever seen. And there's one guy sitting upstage right on a bench smoking a cigarette.
And that is Joe Carroll's track.
And that's your boy. That's Joe Carroll's track.
Hey, how did that happen?
Because like
she didn't like his dancing. I mean, let's be very real.
That is exactly true. That is 100% true. And so that's the basis of it. But that's it.
But also,
that's
jokes on them because he doesn't have to do it. You know?
Yeah. They needed somebody to sing. I was like a singer on the track because everybody's dancing their asses off. So they had a couple of us who just like needed to like sit on the side and just sing because they, you know, the dancers were huffing and puffing. Right. Anyway.
I mean, that show.
So dumb.
I hope they have like a PT person in the building.
Yeah.
For that show, because wow.
You know, there's a million things we've talked about already, but Delon, we want to know a few questions here. What would you say, you mentioned this earlier, but what is your greatest challenge been in your career, do you think? You mentioned in college that it was about, you know, the fear of your own success, but I wonder, you know, what have you come across so far that's been the greatest challenge for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably cliche to say, but just confidence, man. I can say that I know that I'm a talented individual, right? But I can't say that that I always feel like my performance is fantastic, right? I can't say, you're always judging yourself more than others judge you, right? We all know that. But the older I get, the closer I get to 40, the more confident I am, which I am like running toward, just because, it just takes a lot. It takes a lot for me to be confident and feel like I'm worthy, you know? And again, that's not unique to me, you know, in our business, because we all suffer from that in our business. But you know, we're all, I would tell a young kid, man, you know, there's nobody like you. Like Dan said, there's no DeLon, right? DeLon, like little DeLon, you know, like fucking, you're great, man. You know, you're on Broadway, you have all these things, right? So I'm trying to be a lot more confident and just believe in myself more. It takes a lot though.
What's the hack? Is it just totally time in the business, or is there some kind of mind trickery, or what do you think?
Good question. I'm starting to believe that it's finding my own voice, literally and figuratively, in the art. You know, a lot of, as actors, we interpret someone's script, someone's song, someone's idea for the show, and I'm starting to ask myself more and more, just where is your voice in that, right? A lot of times we just want to work and we just want to do a project, but it's okay to just say no. I don't see myself in that. I don't fit that, you know, that's not for me. And so finding a lot of more, and that take, you know, I'm trying to write and dabble and do some of that stuff. So I think that's a part of it, but making sure that you're in the equation, you know, whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
You're writing? What are you writing? What are you working on?
God, man, I've been trying to write this one man show for like all of the but even before the pandemic, but writing is hard.
Yes, it is.
yes, it is.
So damn hard, especially when you're, you know, what's that Ira Glass quote? Your taste level is a certain height, you know, at a certain level, right? And trying a new endeavor. And I'm trying to write a one man show. But I also want it to be music, you know, and I don't really play anything. So I'm teaching myself guitar and piano. So, you know, talk to me in 2030 when I'm able to do it. I'm trying to, you know, not only is writing hard, but like having something significant to say, to get people to come and sit and watch, right? For an hour or an hour and a half, is I'm trying to figure out what that is, what is going to move both Joe and Dan, you know, instead of watching me, if I'm sitting up there masturbating, not literally, but masturbating for an hour and a half, you know, about my feelings, is that interesting? You know, I don't know.
But also, so you've created the impossible task, which is an obstacle for you, which is like trying to figure out how you can speak to other people.
Right.
Which
right.
is going to get in your way, because then you're just going to self-edit before you even have an idea.
Dan, I have pages on a Google Doc. I mean, probably 50 pages of stuff. And it's all that. It's me going like, well, no, that's not interesting. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is you crying. You know what I mean? So like trying to figure out what the thread is, trying to read more to figure out how gifted essayists do it. You know, so I read some essays and I'm like, man, you, in that paragraph, you said exactly what my heart, you're singing to me, you know?
Right.
I wish I had the same capacity to make other people feel that. So
yeah,
trying to figure that out.
The art of being a YouTuber is obviously not as high level as being an essayist, but one of the things that they always talk about is like, if it's something that you feel like you need, make that. There's a gap, you know what I mean? Down. There was a gap in what I was looking for on YouTube, and I was putting all of these other resources together, so then my channel became what I was looking for. And turns out there are other people that are also looking for that, you know?
Wow. make something you need. I love that. Yes.
Is there so you good. Were just mentioning essays. Is there a book or a resource or something that you found invaluable in your career, or something that you really hang your hat on?
You know, there was this, I did this show, and this guy I couldn't stand in the show gave me this book for Christmas.
And his name was Stan Tracy. No, just kidding.
I couldn't stand this fucking guy.
Love that.
And he gave me this book, and it actually did bridge the gap. Good on him. But it's The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield.
Yep.
We have it.
For a while, I was reading that once a year, I was reading that book over and over again. Not all of it sinks in, but some of it is like, I mean, the gist of it, the t-shirt phrase is like, get up and do it, you know, stop thinking, get up and do it. Recently I read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Somebody else mentioned
which
that.
Which is kind of similar. She's a writer, obviously. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love, but a lot of it is just about being an artist. And that one I want to reread in the next month as well, because that kind of made me, it was a deep breath again, like, oh yes, okay, you get it, you understand.
That's awesome. And then we always ask one of our last questions, I call it the unreachable star question, which is like, what is way on the horizon, something you're pointed towards, something you'd love to accomplish, that you've reached the top of Mount Broadway, and now where to next?
You know, it's so funny. I'm trying not to like edit myself out of it. But I really want the whole album tour. I want to be a musician, man. I really do want to be able to, before I leave this earth, I want to be able to say I've done that.
Cool.
Music moves us, you know, that's why it can make you so sad. It can change your mood. I wake up every day and listen to music. Or during the pandemic, I was having solo dance parties, and I was like, oh, you know why all of this? I started in choir, and then I did the musical right in high school, and it was music. It's always been music. Right. I just haven't had the confidence and the skill there. So, so talk to me in 2030 again.
That's perfect. It's like your elementary school sweetheart. You're like, it's you. It's always been you.
Absolutely. And you're like, I've
loved you. I've always loved you.
Totally. Just waiting for you to love me back, man.
Music had you at hello.
It sure did.
You really got Joe with the freaking rom-com reference. Good God. Joe's like, I feel seen. I think he's crying. Are you crying?
No.
Is that a tear?
I'm not. It's not a tear, but I just, this has been one of my absolute favorite conversations that we have ever had. Dan,
I agree.
Delon, I can't believe, thank you for your openness, for your insight. I mean, I've always loved talking to you. I miss Hold Fast. I miss standing at a bar talking to you, but there's just so much good in this hour. And I'm going to listen back to it. When I get stuck, when I'm not writing, I mean, I've always it's always been music for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I struggle with the confidence thing constantly. I mean, I think it's just so strange. People probably look at people on Broadway and don't think that. And then it's like, no, like we're all just head cases. just terrified. We're never going to work again.
Yes.
We're all the same exact soul that was on stage at 18 thinking, do they think I'm good enough at this? Except now you're 28, 38, 48. Thinking the same thing.
I mean, listen, I had a conversation with Jen Colella, and we were, and during the filming, and she was like, I had said something one time about not being a leading man, and, you know, whatever. I have this voice, this body, I'm tall, and I'm, you know, broad shouldered and whatever. And so I fit the type, but I'm like, the reason I said that was not only because I don't know, I haven't seen the part necessarily for me, but it's also that is work. I said, do you know we've all been significant parts in shows. The hurricane that happens internally every time I go on the stage, when you're the lead of a show, I need a Xanax. You know, it's just, it's a lot of stress, you know? And so I was like, that's why I don't see myself as a leading man. It's not that I won't take the part. It's just that, you know, I gotta prepare myself. It's, you know, my brain. And she was like, I totally get it. When you're leading it, man, it is, people don't know what's happening internally. You look confident because you've acted confident, but
that's right, enough. Yeah. You're the picture of confidence.
Yes.
You don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's a temperament thing. Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Right.
I've had the same experience. Well, Delon, this has been awesome. An absolute delight. Where can people find you in the world?
Yeah, on the social media, I'm at thedelon.com, and my website is thedelon.com, so find my stuff there.
Consistency, y'all. That's key to the handles.
Very branding.
Important. Exactly.
Brand. Right, Joe?
Joe Carroll Mish, baby.
That's right.
I need a new Instagram name like a decade ago, but here we are.
Jesus
God
Christ.
Damn it.
Joe loves golf 224.
You know what? It's a process. I'll get there, Dan.
Honestly, I'd prefer that.
Joe loves golf 224.
Yeah, I think that'd be better for you. That's all, folks. Thank you for listening to Guys Who Like Musicals. We are now part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Woo!
We are hosted by Dan Tracy.
That's you.
And Joe Carroll.
That's me.
We're produced by Ryan Kincaid, and Matthew Mucha is the social content manager.
You can find us on Instagram at Guys Who Like Musicals, on Twitter at Musical Guys, or the old-fashioned way at www.guyswholikemusicals.com.
If you'd like a chance to be featured on the Ask the Guys segment of our show, please call 203-900-7990 and leave a message with your question. As always, thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.